Iran says Israel's advanced military nuclear program poses a serious threat to international security, urging the UN nuclear agency to fulfill its responsibility in this regard. China accuses the U.S. of double standards for challenging its sovereignty over Taiwan while supporting Ukraine's sovereignty amid its war with Russia. And Russia's foreign minister says a supply of Western weapons to Ukraine only prolongs the agony of the country's government, extends the conflict, and increases its victims. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. Our top story, Iran's foreign ministry has warned about the threat posed by Israel's advanced military nuclear program and the failure of relevant international bodies to take necessary action. Ministry spokesperson said the apartheid regime's relentless refusal to place its nuclear facilities under comprehensive safeguards poses a serious threat to international security. Nasser Kanani called on the UN nuclear agency to fulfill its responsibility in this regard as stipulated in its statute. He said that accordingly, the International Atomic Energy Agency and its Director General have to strive toward promoting peaceful applications of nuclear energy and non-diversion from those objectives. Israel is believed to have a stockpile of up to 400 nuclear warheads, but the regime maintains a policy of ambiguity in this regard. It refuses to either allow inspections of its military nuclear facilities or sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran's president tells his Chinese counterpart Tehran supports the One China principle. Ebrahim Raisi says Tehran has always respected the territorial integrity of countries as a key policy.
Respecting the national sovereignty and territorial integrity of countries is among the fundamental principles of the Islamic Republic of Iran's foreign policy. Within the same framework, backing the One China policy is the principled and definite policy of the Islamic Republic.
During the phone conversation, Raisi also condemned the U.S. for interference in internal affairs of other countries. The president said that Washington follows a destructive policy of unilateralism, which is now threatening global peace and security. China's Xi Jinping, for his part, said Iran has played a constructive role in maintaining regional stability. The two presidents also discussed ways to speed up the implementation of a landmark 25-year cooperation agreement between Beijing and Tehran. The deal is aimed at strengthening economic and political ties between the two countries. Palestinians are having no respite from Israeli atrocities as regime forces kill another teenager in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian Health Ministry says a 16-year-old died of critical wounds sustained by live bullets to the chest. Another Palestinian was also shot and wounded by Israeli forces. Palestinians are holding a demonstration near Ramallah against Israeli settlements when they came under attack by regime forces and settlers. Israel has recently ramped up violence against Palestinians, killing over 50 of them since late March. Nearly 700,000 Israeli settlers live in settlements in East Al-Quds and the West Bank. Settlements are built on land captured following the 1967 war and are all illegal under international law. And earlier we spoke to our West Bank correspondent Moni Kandil for more information about the killing of the young Palestinian teenager by Israeli forces.
A 16-year-old Palestinian teenager, Amjad Abu Aliya, from the village of Al-Mghayr near Ramallah, was shot dead by Israeli forces, by the fire of Israeli forces and Israeli settlers. This is according to eyewitnesses there. There was an invitation or a call for Palestinians to take part in an anti-Israeli settlement protest because Israeli settlers there, protected and backed by Israeli forces, continue to storm the Al-Mghayr village on a daily basis, attack Palestinians, throw stones at them, hit them, in order to force them leave their lands because the settlers want to confiscate more lands in the village of Al Mghayr. So Palestinians were protesting there following the Friday prayers, and Israeli settlers raided again the village of Al Mghayr, backed and supported by fully armed Israeli forces. And we have to mention that the Israeli settlers themselves are also armed like the Israeli soldiers. They opened fire at Palestinian protesters there, wounding dozens of them.
Palestinian resistance movements has also slammed recent killing of the teenager we just told you about in occupied West Bank by Israeli forces. The resistance movement Hamas underscored an increase in the number of crimes committed by the regime in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. It said the Palestinian cause will not wane in the face of Israeli atrocities. And the Islamic Jihad resistance movement echoed a similar message of Palestinian resilience in reaction to the killing of the 16-year-old. The Palestinian presidency said Israel committed a heinous crime.
This crime comes within the framework of the daily series of killing that our people are subjected to, whether by the occupation army or its settlers who are wreaking havoc and murder under the protection of Israel.
A spokesman also said the regime must face the consequences of the dangerous escalation against Palestinians and their sanctities. Rudaina said the regime protects settlers while violating all resolutions of international legitimacy and law. He says such crimes reveal Israel's disregard for its commitments and broken promises made by the U.S. during President Joe Biden's visit. Commitments include halting all daily killings of Palestinians and stopping provocative measures by the regime. Rudaina called on the international community to break its silence towards Israeli atrocities and hold the regime accountable for its organized crimes. Beijing has slammed what it calls Washington's double standards for challenging China's sovereignty over Taiwan.
As the legal cornerstone of today's international order, the international charter is irreplaceable in its role and unshakable in its status. Compliance with the purposes and principles of the UN Charter should be consistent with words matching with deeds instead of saying one thing but doing another, not to mention double standards or selective application. While some country has repeatedly emphasized the principle of sovereignty over the issue of Ukraine, it has incessantly challenged the sovereignty of China over Taiwan.
Ambassador also accused the U.S. of deliberately causing tensions in the Taiwan Strait. He added the U.S. is showing disregard to our U.N. Charter. On Thursday, Chinese President Xi Jinping told the U.S. President Joe Biden Washington is playing with fire over Taiwan. Tensions over the island have recently flared over a planned visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, with China warning Washington of consequences. Beijing considers Taiwan part of its territory. Earlier, we spoke to political commentator Greg Simons to get some more perspective on the U.S. stance on Taiwan.
Well, it's pretty clear. I mean, they're taking a very similar strategy and using it against China versus Taiwan as they did between Russia and Ukraine before the war broke out. That this is meant to increase tensions and, I mean, this controlled chaos, which the U.S. hopes to reassert itself as the leading global power, which at the moment is in disarray. What it's doing, it's very similar to what the United States was using between Russia and Ukraine, which it was to constrain and contain Russia. And they're using attempting a very similar strategy with China over Taiwan. However, this, of course, what we've seen, the response from Russia to the Ukrainian situation has actually undermined the US strategy. And they're repeating the same strategy again with China and Taiwan. The US, should we say, intellectually is not what it used to be. It's fighting a very short term and ultimately engaging in a losing strategy.
Russia's foreign minister has slammed the U.S. and NATO for supplying billions of dollars worth of weapons and military equipment to Ukraine. Sergei Lavrov says shipments only prolong the agony of the Ukrainian government, extend the conflict, and increase its victims. Lavrov made the remarks in a phone call with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. This was the first contact between the two since the beginning of Russia's war in Ukraine in late February. Lavrov also called for dialogue between the two sides on the issue of a potential prisoner swap. Blinken also described the call as frank and direct. He said the world wouldn't recognize any Russian move to absorb more Ukrainian territory. Many have denounced the Europe-wide censorship of Russian media outlet Russia Today as intensely hypocritical. However, the European Union's General Court has just denied an appeal by Russia's RT France to uphold liberty of the press for all nations. Rami Mazahari reports from Paris.
In a major blow to freedom of the press, the European Union's second highest court has upheld the ban on Russian media outlet RT France for alleged disinformation. Launched in 2017 with a 20 million euro budget and well over 100 employees, RT France burst onto the scene with reporting that the billionaire-dominated French mainstream media refused to touch. Their coverage of the Yellow Vest social revolt won widespread praise. They rejected the total Western media blackout on the movement, which began in June 2019.
Recueillir l'information.
Providing news is a public service and an obligation of every state. Therefore, it is entirely legitimate for a state to contribute to the budget of medias so that their citizens have balanced, objective information according to their own point of view.
It was no surprise that President Emmanuel Macron was the first leader to call for a Europe-wide ban on Russian state media. The French government then orchestrated the rapid implementation of the ban less than a week after Russia started its military operation in Ukraine.
It's dramatic when you ban alternative news sources, which haven't even broken any laws. There has been no slander or racism or calls for violence, and yet they're denied freedom of expression. It's a dramatic problem for France and Europe, and compounded by the fact that there is absolutely no alternative point of view permitted or available in French media.
The fact that freedom of the press is granted to far-right media such as the Islamophobic Charlie Hebdo magazine, but denied to the Russian people, has already left its impression. The citizens of France and Europe have not been allowed to hear both sides of the long-running conflict in Ukraine. This one-sided media domination has allowed European elite to whip up Russophobia and war hysteria unopposed, and provided them with the opportunity to impose unprecedented economic and diplomatic pressure on Moscow. Upon relinquishing the EU's rotating presidency in June, Macron was criticized for saying that the unrest in Ukraine accelerated the bloc's collective agenda. The EU was criticized for once again relying on not democratic means to achieve political ends. A final appeal by RT France to the European Court of Justice is expected to fail as well. In 2012, on the orders of the European Commission, Press TV was removed by top European satellite provider Eutelsat. Last year, the PressTV.com domain was seized and shut down by the United States federal government. Rami Mazahari, Paris.
A survey released by British advocacy group CAGE has revealed shocking feedback regarding British schools pushing Western propaganda on Ukraine while gagging any student activism in support of Palestine. Findings appear to show UK government involvement with both initiatives to peddle Ukraine sympathy and outlaw Palestine solidarity. Robert Carter reports out of London.
A new study has revealed a shocking disparity by British schools, which have gone to great lengths to promote Ukraine solidarity among their students, in stark contrast to how Palestinian solidarity is suppressed in the classroom. Human rights group CAGE carried out the survey, which received 532 responses from parents, students, and teachers. The group said the survey revealed a cavalier attitude to due diligence, including collaboration with organizations with far-right links and the soft penetration of security think tanks and those linked to the UK's so-called Prevent Counter-Extremism program. Some of the survey's findings include 96% of respondents confirming proactive engagement on the Ukraine issue by their school, including holding non-uniform days, activities, or donation appeals. 62% indicated their school had fundraised or hosted donation drives for Ukraine, while 17% also mentioned schools promote the Ukraine flag, such as hoisting the Ukrainian flag on school grounds. And perhaps most shockingly, alleged funding from some schools was intended to provide military gear for the war. In 2021, Israel's bombing of Gaza drew huge international backlash as millions took to the streets worldwide. British students also joined the outpouring of support for Palestine. However, British schools responded negatively, with students being punished for waving a Palestinian flag or branded racist in some cases for expressing solidarity.
For Palestine, supporting Palestine goes against British foreign policy interests. Support for Ukraine is in line with that, and hence that was allowed and encouraged, and the government even produced guidance for schools into how, and for parents into how they could do so. While for Palestine, the government minister for education at the time, Gavin Williamson, he issued a letter, clear letter to schools, indicating to them that discussion on Palestine needs to be clamped down or managed to such a degree where it can only ever amplify the pro-Israeli, pro-apartheid narrative.
In early July, London's High Court dismissed a legal challenge by Cage against the Department for Education over issuing so-called discriminatory guidance, which was then used by schools to censor and penalise any student who was willing to express solidarity with Palestine, particularly during Israel's bombardment of Gaza last year. This whole saga will have convinced many more that Britain may indeed be biased when looking at conflicts and human rights abuses abroad. Robert Carter, London.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Israeli regime is feeling no international pressure to end its tightened blockade on Gaza, which entered its 15th year this summer. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Maureen Claire Morphy, journalist. This article is published under the heading Cruelty Against Gaza Patients, Enabled by US and EU. Stay tuned for more. The Israeli regime is feeling no international pressure to end its tightened blockade on Gaza, which entered its 15th year this summer. The Jerusalem Declaration, signed by U.S. President Joe Biden and the Zionist regime Prime Minister Yair Lapid earlier this month, makes no demand on Tel Aviv to lift the siege on Gaza. In fact, it makes no direct mention of Gaza at all. The territory is only referred to indirectly, where it states that the U.S. is committed to seeking additional assistance for the Israeli regime in exceptional circumstances, such as the hostilities over 11 years in May 2021. During that week and a half, the Zionist regime inflicted yet another catastrophe on Gaza. The Israeli regime used weapons made by Boeing, a company based in Chicago, to destroy residential towers in Gaza, massacring families in their homes. Stateless Palestinians are not allowed to defend themselves from the existential threat posed by Israeli regime arms provided by the U.S. and are branded as terrorists when they do so. Meanwhile, Brussels is rewarding the Tel Aviv regime for its crimes by reviving the EU's high-level forum with the Israeli regime. No meetings of the EU-Israel Association Council, as the forum is known, have been held for a decade due to apparent friction. In 2013, the Zionist regime reacted angrily when the Brussels bureaucracy issued guidelines which seemed to bar Israeli regime bodies operating in occupied territory from reviving EU funding. Little noticed at the time, the guidelines actually contain a loophole which has allowed the Israeli regime police force and other authorities headquartered in the occupied East Al-Quds to continue and even step up their cooperation with the EU. The Israeli regime's international accomplices are seemingly content with the siege on Gaza becoming as permanent as the belligerent military occupation that began in 1967. The cruelty of the siege and depravity of those who prolong it cannot be overstated. Gaza has long been subjected to various forms of Israeli regime closure and movement restrictions over the past several decades. More than two-thirds of the some 2.1 million Palestinians who live there are refugees denied the right to return to their homes and land in what is now called the fake regime of Israel. 16 UK charities called for an immediate end to the siege last week. This has been a devastating chapter in the decades-long fragmentation imposed on the Palestinian people, which continues to undermine their fundamental rights, the group's state. They add, with its sweeping restrictions on the entry and exit of people and goods, the deliberate policy of closure has resulted in the de-development of Gaza's economy. Gaza's population is now impoverished, with some of the highest unemployment rates in the world and more than 60% requiring food assistance. The Zionist regime's siege has had disastrous effects on the lives and health of Palestinians in Gaza, as noted by Physicians for Human Rights. Nearly 850 patients died while waiting for a permit to travel outside of Gaza for life-saving treatment, according to the group. Physicians for Human Rights states that around one-third of applications for children requiring medical treatment outside Gaza were delayed or denied between January and September last year. Some 40% of boys and girls in Gaza who received medical treatment outside the territory in 2020 did so without their parents, who must also apply for Israeli regime permits to accompany their children. This is despite how the vast majority of applications for travel to access healthcare treatment were for appointments at Palestinian hospitals in East Al-Quds and elsewhere in the West Bank. According to Physicians for Human Rights, hence, accompany permits and accommodation inside the occupied territories are relevant, if anything, in very few cases. Meanwhile, the Israeli regime prevents Palestinian medical professionals from leaving Gaza for training, thereby further reducing the capacity of the highly strained healthcare sector in the territory. Physicians for Human Rights urges the removal of the Israeli permit system and the blockade over the Gaza Strip and calls for an end to the occupation. These measures are necessary for ensuring that the Palestinian healthcare system can develop as an independent, autonomous, and sustainable unit, and that all Palestinians have access to advanced medical treatment.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, my dear friends, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a new episode of Back to Reality. Hope you're doing great and everything is just fine with you. Now that we have your precious attention, buckle up to fly beyond the surface of your favorite topics. You are listening to Arab English Radio, and this is Asma, at your service as the host. Well, as for our dear guest, I should say today is heaven. I have two of my very dear, amazing friends, and together we'd provide some captivating, thought-provoking stuff for you. And I forgot to tell you that both of them are Zainab. So I shall add that S
on you, Zainab.
Yes. However, okay. I'm Zainab Sadat. You can call me Zainab Sadat,
yes,
in order
Zainab
to differentiate.
Now
two men.
That you introduced yourself, please give us a little bit more about yourself.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I'm Zainab Sadat. I have my BA in English Language and Literature and my MA in Teaching English as a Foreign Language. And
so great.
And of course, one of my big interests is in religious studies. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because of my interest and my studies that I have the privilege of sitting in front of you today.
Oh, no, then on the other side, I have my dear one, Zainab.
Zainab Askari.
Yes.
Assalamu alaikum.
And you, Zainab, please give us a bit about your field of study.
Okay. Oh, well, I have done my master's in linguistics from India.
Yes.
And then I am still engaged in religious studies in the Hausa of Qom as
of now. So I am over exhilarated to be with both of you.
Thank you.
And I'm sure we're going to set the table on fire. Well, today we are going to talk about something which has been pretty much viral, and I guess there is no single person in this world who could claim that I do not have this sort of disorder, which is obsessive compulsive disorder. In short, we call it OCD.
Mm-hmm.
So from now on, when we say OCD, we just mean obsessive compulsive disorder. It could happen in two different forms, generally. Practical and mental. Mm-hmm. Sometimes this obsession is just something that comes to your brain. It happens only in your thoughts. But sometimes it manifests itself in practical ways. What are your ideas upon that?
Obsessive compulsive disorder. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's it first attacks your brain. It comes into your mind first, and then it affects your practical life.
So at the
life.
Beginning, it's something mental.
Exactly.
And then it manifests itself in a practical
exactly.
manner.
It comes out as in the practical
So what
form.
Are the causes for that?
Fear. I personally consider fear to be, because if I personally consider something, if I'm obsessed with something,
yeah.
when I look at back into the things, why I'm obsessed with this mm-hmm. is a fear.
So you say that having some sort of phobias is also, could
yes.
be considered as a
yes.
way of OCD.
I think that's one of the most important reasons, fear or phobia. For example, I am personally obsessed with relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I have lost many relations. The first thing why I get obsessed is the fear of losing that person. So if that fear was not there, I would have not been much obsessed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a very nice point. Talking about mental obsession,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe when you let the negative thoughts to be heightened in your mind, when you let them just to grow, you just provide you set the ground for becoming obsessed with them. So I think negative thoughts and being pessimistic somehow
exactly. yeah, yeah.
is another
so
reason.
So negativity is itself a sort of mental disorder.
Yes. For example, being pessimistic about people, it is again another form of obsession, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what do you say about being idealistic? I guess too
be.
Much of idealistic ideas would lead you into a sort of OCD.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes yes, it's true. Even learning, you know. Sometimes it's learning from watching people. I have gone through some articles that say it could be genetic. It could be just
It's very interesting. Is it genetics?
It is. And it's yes. sometimes even said that it's bloody. Like there may be some chemistry in your blood that to lead you to have an obsessive compulsive disorder. And sometimes it's just, you know, since you watch your mother, she's a neat freak. She comes on and cleans mm-hmm. every 5 minutes. You as a daughter learn all that.
Uh-huh.
And you
get
become a disorder just by learning, just by watching her. So
mm-hmm.
it's something you could also have because of watching someone.
Because of the environment.
Because of the environment.
So you could get it from the environment that is nurturing you.
Exactly. Like someone in your family is time conscious and gets so much depressed. I think every one of us, as you rightly mentioned in the beginning, is suffering from one or the other form of OCDs.
The thing is that different situations
yes.
could heighten this feeling, these bad feelings,
yes.
and make us involved in them.
And one of the very most, let me just say, dangerous form of it is the one that they are so obsessed with cleaning.
Yes, Asma. And
washing
I have,
their hands, I don't know, taking showers,
I have
24
since
hours.
Since it was just COVID, it was okay to wear masks and be
of
hygienic.
Course, of
but there are so people who are so yes. obsessed with it now,
yeah.
so obsessed.
And
people,
the habits remained with them
yeah.
even after the pandemic.
Everything was fine.
You know that
yes.
we already, all of us, have seen people, even before the pandemic, they use sanitizers.
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
this is a sort
and,
of obsession.
And did you realize that they felt they caught COVID first? They
Moral.
Used so many chemicals just for needing
mm-hmm.
purpose.
And I would say that because their thought was so obsessed with it, and since when you're afraid of something, you will get into
yes.
it.
Yes.
Then that's why
that's
perhaps
the case.
They
yes.
couldn't tolerate the situation.
And then you come back to fear. That's why it's
yes.
one of the reasons is
about
fear.
The COVID virus. Yes, yes. The what they gathered the negative thoughts, and the negative thoughts just made them think about when
so all
I,
those ideas, all those causes are just combining into.
Yes, yes.
Now.
I know. I will die. I take this virus.
For
I
this
would
thing.
Just you know, fill up the soap case with the liquid soap at my home, and I would say in the afternoon it was nowhere, and I would ask my son, "What's wrong with you?" And he would
oh
say,
God.
No, I'm watching television that you have to wash your hands regularly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I told him regular washing does not mean that you will finish up the
you cut your hands with those things.
Yes.
Yes.
And I know
And
some
especially when you're not going out at all. So that was really freakiness.
Yeah. That would lead into obsession.
We'll be back in no time. Dear audience, stay with us.
¶¶ This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
The person who is so much obsessed with neatness, he's caring too much about putting things in their place, and he's so meticulous about.
I think asthma at some point of time, it's really good. I won't say, especially in terms of time.
Being punctual.
Time is something.
Punctuality OCD is a good sort of OCD.
You know why? Because time is something that's not in our control. It's just going. It's flying. And it helps you to be punctual. You are always punctual. You're always on time. You don't lose things. And importance of time is so much discussed. I mean,
you know what? But I think the positive OCD is just being punctual or just doing lots of things that, as just Asma said, are considered as good OCDs. They are all good, and some habits are all good until they make us so much obsessed that doing such the things would bother us. Until then, everything is good.
I think she wants to say obsession is good, but when it turns into disorder, it's not good.
No, obsession. Obsession with good things. Being punctual, being, I don't know.
Just consider the very fact that obsession is a very, very great word, you know? It has so much of connotations, and it's mostly negative.
Because whenever something
turns into an obsession, then it would kill you, because it is something that happens inside your brain, and most of the time, many thoughts pop up into your head that you totally don't like those thoughts to get into your skin. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It turns into a silent killer. That's what I actually mean to say. Mm-hmm. So according to me, there is no good sort of OCD. Be it shopping, you know, because there are some people who are shopaholics. They would love to buy many things. And no matter how much they buy things, still they feel like there is a need for them to get and buy more and more and more.
I don't believe like three of us are women sitting here and we're talking about that, buying things.
No, we are not shopaholics.
That becomes a bad thing when it comes to obsession, as just as Ma said. Shopping in its nature is a good thing.
Just imagine being an OCD about shopping, being a shopaholic, and then your pocket does not help you. What would happen to you?
You would be bothered. Believe me, I know people. Yes, I know people whose habits, as just you said, her habit is to go and buy things that she does not need.
Their happiness is through that buying.
Yes, the even more they buy, the more they would be happy.
Even if it's window shopping.
Yes, and even if they do not need that thing.
Yeah. I guess I overthink, and that's a bad sort of OCD.
All right. Well, I personally think that if I know that tomorrow my guests are coming, I would not be able to sleep for the whole night just thinking.
Stressed out.
Seriously. I would not be able to sleep.
Yes. You're guest freak.
I'm guest freak because I have to make sure that I'll try to sleep, and when I'm turning on my right side, I'll just think on, I have to clean. I have to make sure that everything is extremely clean.
Wow.
And then
that's
I'll turn on another side on my bed and see.
I guess that's
what
the usual thing that happens to everyone when they have guests.
Come on.
But
everybody has guests.
I don't think there are women who cannot sleep for the whole night. If my guests are coming tomorrow afternoon or even like tomorrow evening, I wouldn't be able to sleep for the whole night just thinking how I'll clean, what I'll cook. Will I be able to manage time? Yeah. Actually, I'm a time freak.
Okay, yeah.
Being punctual is okay, but if your punctuality is with stress, it may kill you within. And my punctuality is with stress.
Just we have to focus on the meaning of obsession. That's a huge concept, you know?
Obsession is something.
It has negative.
Yeah, obsession is something that is. I would like to call it a silent killer. That's obsession. Whatever that turns into an obsession, it would kill you.
And do you think Zainab's case is some type of a silent killer?
You know, when we say silent killer, it's actually metaphorical. You are going to suffer from it all alone by yourself. You know, it would, of course, bother her because she won't have a silent night.
You know?
It would be sleepless, and then it would have some effect on her body. Her stomach, you know, we have some neural disorders
there
that would happen.
There is factors she's talking
but
about.
But you know that, you know what, Zainab? I have seen the people who have been suffering from obsession and their lives is paralyzed somehow.
Yeah. Everywhere there are levels of it. You know, when we talk about obsession, we have light obsession, we have medium obsession.
It's really meager in comparison to their problems.
Anything that you do includes stress. I think obsession is there.
Yeah.
I think obsession is there because you have you then turn into anxiety and so many other depression kind of things.
So thank you, dear listeners. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. We were talking of OCD. And when it comes to even these sort of obsessions, try to have good ones, like go for books. Have book reading obsession. That would be a sort of good obsession. That's, I guess, the only sort of good obsession I would have in my mind. And
stop pleasing others. If you start pleasing others, you would have this OCD forever. So if you do it for yourself, that may be a positive
one. Many
of
mental issues comes with that fact that you should think about yourself. And
tell
not
yourself,
just being selfish.
And tell yourself, like, it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay, and let it go. Leave and let others leave.
Yes.
So thank you for staying with us.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي let the Ummah rise again let us see daylight again once again
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
The Assange persecution is the greatest threat to Western press freedoms in years. It is also a shining monument to the fraud of American and British self-depictions, says Glenn Greenwald, author, in an article published under the heading The UK's decision to extradite Assange shows why the US-UK's freedom lectures are a farce. The 11-year persecution of Julian Assange was extended and escalated recently. The British Home Secretary Priti Patel approved a US extradition request to send Julian Assange to Virginia to stand trial on 18 felony charges under the 1917 Espionage Act and other statutes in connection with 2010 publication by WikiLeaks of thousands of documents showing widespread corruption, deceit and war crimes by American and British authorities along with their close dictatorial allies in the West Asia-North Africa region. This decision is unsurprising. It has been obvious for years that the US and UK are determined to destroy Assange as punishment for his journalism exposing their crimes, yet it nonetheless further highlights the utter sham of American and British sermons about freedom, democracy, and a free press. Those performative, self-glorifying spectacles are constantly deployed to justify these two countries' interference in and attacks on other nations and to allow their citizens to feel a sense of superiority about the nature of their governments. After all, if the US and UK stand for freedom and against tyranny, who could possibly oppose their wars and interventions in the name of advancing such lofty goals and noble values? Having reported on the Assange case for years on countless occasions, laid out the detailed background that led Assange and the US to this point, there is thus no need to recount all of that again. Those interested can read the granular trajectory of this persecution here and there. Suffice to say, Assange, without having been convicted of any crime other than bail jumping for which he long ago served out his 50-week sentence, has been in effective imprisonment for more than a decade. In 2012, Ecuador granted Assange legal asylum from political persecution. It did so after the Swedish government refused to pledge that it would not exploit the WikiLeaks founder's travel to Sweden to answer sex assault accusations as a pretext to turn him over to the US, fearing, what of course ended up happening, that the US was determined to do everything possible to drag Assange back to US soil, despite his not being a US citizen and never having spent more than a few days on US soil. And intending to pressure their long-time submissive Swedish allies to turn him over once he was on Swedish soil. The government of Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa concluded Assange's core civic rights were being denied and thus gave him refuge in the tiny Ecuadorian embassy in London. The classic reason political asylum exists. When Trump officials led by CIA Director Mike Pompeo bullied Correa's meek successor, ex-president Lenin Moreno, to withdraw that asylum in 2019, the London police entered the embassy, arrested Assange, and put him in the high-security Belmarsh prison, which the BBC in 2004 dubbed the British Guantanamo, where he has remained ever since. After the lowest-level British court in early 2021 rejected the US extradition request on the ground that Assange's physical and mental health could not endure the US prison system, Assange has lost every subsequent appeal. Last year, he was permitted to marry his fiancée, the British human rights lawyer Stella Morris Assange, who is also the mother of their two young children. An extremely unusual unanimity among press freedom and civil liberties groups was formed in early 2021 to urge the Biden administration to cease its prosecution of Assange. But Biden officials, despite spending the Trump years masquerading as press freedom advocates, ignored them. The recent UK Home Secretary's decision, characteristically subservient and obedient of the British when it comes to the demands of the US, does not mean that Assange's presence on U.S. soil is imminent. Under British law, Assange has the right to pursue a series of appeals contesting the Home Secretary's decision and will likely do so. Given that the British judiciary has more or less announced in advance their determination to follow the orders of their American masters, it is difficult to see how these further proceedings will have any effect other than to delay the inevitable. But putting oneself in Assange's position, it is easy to see why he is so eager to avoid extradition to the U.S. for as long as possible. The Espionage Act of 1917 is a nasty and repressive piece of legislation. It was designed by Woodrow Wilson and his band of authoritarian progressives to criminalize dissent against Wilson's decision to involve the U.S. in the First World War. It was used primarily to imprison anti-war leftists such as Eugene Debs, as well as anti-war religious leaders such as Joseph Franklin Rutherford, for the crime of publishing a book condemning Wilson's foreign policy. One of the most insidious despotic innovations of the Obama administration was to repurpose and revitalize the Wilson-era Espionage Act as an all-purpose weapon to punish whistleblowers who denounced Obama's policies. The Obama Justice Department under Attorney General Eric Holder prosecuted more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act of 1917 than all previous administrations combined. In fact, three times as many as all prior presidents combined. One whistleblower charged by Obama officials under that law is NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, who in 2013 revealed mass domestic spying of precisely the kind that Obama's Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, now of CNN, falsely denied conducting when testifying to the Senate, which led to legislative curbs enacted by the U.S. Congress and which courts have ruled unconstitutional and illegal. What makes this law so insidious is that, by design, it is almost impossible for the government to lose. As detailed in a Washington Post op-ed when the indictment was first revealed, arguing why it poses the greatest threat to press freedoms in the West in years, this 1917 law is written as a strict liability statute, meaning that the defendant is not only guilty as soon as there is proof that they disclosed classified information without authorization, but they are also barred from raising a justification defense, meaning they cannot argue to the jury of their peers that it was not only permissible but morally necessary to disclose that information because of the serious wrongdoing and criminality it revealed on the part of the nation's most powerful political officials. That 1917 law, in other words, is written to offer only show trials but not fair trials. No person in their right mind would willingly submit to prosecution and life imprisonment in the harshest American penitentiaries under an indictment brought under this fundamentally corrupted law. Whatever else one might think of Assange, there is simply no question that he is one of the most consequential, pioneering, and accomplished journalists of his time. One could easily make the case that he occupies the top spot by himself. And that, of course, is precisely why he is in prison, because just like free speech, free press guarantees in the US and UK exist only on a piece of parchment and in theory. Citizens are free to do journalism as long as it does not disturb or anger or impede real power centers. Employees of the Washington Post and CNN are free to say what they want as long as what they are saying is approved and directed by the CIA, or the content of their reporting advances the interest of the Pentagon's sprawling war machine. Real journalists often face threats of prosecution, imprisonment, or even murder, and sometimes even mean tweets. Much of the American corporate media class has ignored Assange's persecution or even cheered it precisely because he shames them, serving as a vivid mirror to show them what real journalism is and how they are completely bereft of it. And the American and British governments have successfully exploited the petty jealousies and insecurities of their failed, vapid, and pointless media servants to get away with imposing the single greatest threat to press freedom in the West without much protest at all. Free speech and press freedoms do not exist in reality in the US or in the UK. They are merely rhetorical instruments to propagandize their domestic population and justify and ennoble the various wars and other forms of subversion they constantly wage in other countries in the name of upholding values they themselves do not support. The Julian Assange persecution is a great personal tragedy, a political travesty, and a grave danger to basic civic freedoms. But it is also a bright and enduring monument to the fraud and deceit that lies at the heart of these two governments' depictions of who and what they are.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.